have you. As always, it is a pleasure to have the founder of Patriot Voices, Senator Rick Santorum, and we're going to have him join us now live on the show. Senator Santorum, great to have you. How are you today?
I am doing great there, Mr. Davidson. How are you today?
Oh, doing fantastic. Congratulations on a great CPAC speech, and I know Patriot Voices had a booth there, and it was an exciting time. You got some great response from people there and the press. Just give us your take on the whole experience.
Well, first I want to thank Nadine, Shelley, and Jeff, and all the folks from Patriot Voices, and the great volunteers that were there that really made it just wonderfully special. I mean, so many of our chapter leaders and state leaders were there and really, really had a huge presence, even though, we didn't, it's not one of those events that we certainly spend a lot of time or money on. It's the volunteer effort was what made it look like we were one of the chief sponsors of CPAC, which is really just a testament to their great effort. So I just want to thank all the folks there for the work they did, and that was just it was just fun to be with everybody and see the energy and enthusiasm around. And I would say that things went well for us because we stuck out a little bit. It was a little different than the continual parade of candidates or potential candidates and speakers who were, trying to play to the crowd. And that crowd at CPAC is, as you know, Dan, is a lot of young folks, a lot of students who, as you can see from the straw poll, back Rand Paul and back Ron Paul, and he's always done really well at these things. And it was, from my mind, not necessarily putting the best face forward, going out there and sort of railing on the Obama administration speaker after speaker. Look, that, as I said in my speech, I understand it's fun, it's easy, and it's one of the things that you feel like you have to do when you see the president doing so much damage to the country. But I think our real goal here between now and the election is to try to paint a positive vision for average Americans. And that's really the focus of the speech that I gave, which is we have to really recognize that most Americans are just tired of all the negativity and charges flying back and forth. And what they want is someone who's going to rise above it all and paint a picture, paint a vision with them included in it as to how life in America can be better. And that's what we tried to do in our speech. And I really believe that as much as Obamacare will be the center point of this election, I believe that, and we need to talk about the problems with Obamacare, we need to also paint a vision of what we're going to do to make sure that not only on health care, but a whole variety of other subjects, we've addressed the needs of folks who have a lot of anxiety in America today.
Well, Senator, I'd like to play just a clip or two from your speech and just get your additional comments. This is a short clip from the beginning of your speech I'll play right now.
I've been watching a little bit of what's going on here at CPAC, and I hear a lot of, we have to win. Now, we all know what they mean. They actually mean we have to lose. We have to lose those currently unfashionable stances on cultural and limited government issues that have been proven over time to give Americans the best chance for a healthy, happy life. So we're told that we have to put aside what we believe is in the best interest of the country so a Republican candidate can win. Now, that may result in a win for a Republican candidate, but it will be a devastating loss for America. I don't know about you, but I'm not out here fighting just to elect Republican candidates and let them win. I'm here to see America win.
Senator, great opening remarks at CPAC. Can you expand a little bit on what the message you were conveying there?
Well, we had seen speaker after speaker, and obviously the first one who went out there to make that case was Governor Christie, saying that we need to lighten up on some of these issues, move away from some of these positions, be more like the other side in order to win elections. And the problem with that is that we'd be doing things that we think are harmful to the country. Why would we do that? Why would we walk away from issues that we know are important for America to be successful, for average Americans to be able to have the opportunity to live a good and decent and prosperous lives? Why would we walk away from those things? If we don't believe them, that's one thing. Then I get that. But if we do believe them, then why would we say, nope, we're not going to fight for those things anymore because they're not popular? Well, they weren't always unpopular, and in fact, it's a pretty mixed bag as to most of these issues are not overwhelmingly popular or unpopular. What they are is they're not particularly well understood, particularly if you have candidates, as we've had in the last couple of elections. If we've had candidates who can't articulate why they should be popular. And I can tell you that when I go on to, and again, this is primarily a young crowd that was out there the other day, when I go on to college campuses and I talk about conservative values, and you know, whether it's moral, cultural, or whether it's economic, or whether it's national security, the most common comment I get from young people is this: "Oh, I never heard that before." They don't, you know, we've stopped making the case. We've been so politically correct and not trying to offend anybody on some of these issues is that we don't even bother to argue them anymore. We hold them,
right?
But we don't campaign on them. We don't discuss them. And that's the problem. The other side, they're not afraid to go out there and push controversial things. They do it all the time. And you know what? They're probably not very popular when they start. But because they don't give up on them, they have a tendency to move the needle as a result.
Senator, I was very inspired by your speech and the beginning of it. After you made those opening remarks, you made it, I thought it was a great focus on what you called working Americans. I'd like to just play a short clip of that and have you comment also.
No, we went out and talked about something different. We went out and talked about focusing on those who are working Americans. Notice I didn't say middle class. I don't know why we do this, fellow conservatives and Republicans. Why do we use a term that is of the other side? Why do we, as Republicans, who believe in the dignity of every human life, who believe in equality of opportunity for everyone to rise, adopt a class envy leftist language that divides America against themselves?
Senator, you later in your speech, you talked about being at the Republican National Convention last time around and how there were all the placards that said, you know, I build that, but you made the great point that we didn't really bring out many working Americans. Can you kind of tell us more about how important that is?
Yeah, I think that's sort of one of the things I learned a long time ago when I was out there presenting and giving speeches, even when I was not in politics. It's not what you say, it's what people hear. And a lot of that has to do with the language choices you use, like middle class, for example. A lot of it has to do with just your body language, has to do with your intonation and how you say things. And so you have to be really careful about, what message are we putting out there when we say, we built that. Well, first off, it was angry. I mean, it's like, okay, you know, Barack Obama was wrong. There's sort of an indignation and anger there that we built that. And, do you really want to see a bunch of business people up there angrily saying that, you know, give me credit for what I've done?
Right.
Or is there a better way to get across that Barack Obama is out of touch because he doesn't understand what makes America tick? He doesn't understand how jobs are created. He doesn't understand the risk and the sacrifice that people make and the benefit to society for them doing that. And the way I suggested, I talked about the convention and having people come out one after another. I spoke that night. So I was backstage and I met all these wonderful small business people, you know, of all different, walks of life, men, women, Hispanics, blacks, you know. I mean, there was a nice diversity. but they were all business people. And so what I suggested was, instead of bringing business person after business person to tell their very compelling story, why don't you get someone who worked for that business person to come out there and, you know, the server
sure.
at the restaurant to walk out and say, you know, let me tell you about the guy who is responsible for my job, the guy that pay, you know, that signs the front of my paycheck, and what he went through. And I just want to say I appreciate that. I appreciate his risking his money, and putting that time in and working those extra hours to create an opportunity for me. And then have that man standing there, that woman, whoever it is, standing there, and put their arm around that server and say, well, I appreciate you, because you know what? We wouldn't be successful as a business without folks who are out there, you know, doing a great job. And, so that's how you unify. You don't divide. You don't go out there and say, I did it, and none of these people did it. You got to say, well, you know, everything's a we. I mean, you don't do anything, you know, in America or anywhere without we. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't recognize the critical role that everybody plays, and understand that when Obama says, well, he didn't build that, well, that's an insult. Of course he did, but it wasn't alone. But don't say he didn't build that. And that's where we could have made the finer point, I think, done it in a way that was unified instead of divided.
Senator, we're going to play a few clips later on the show from additional clips from the CPAC speech. And I just want to tell listeners that they can go to patriotvoices.com. And the link is right there where they can watch the whole speech. Very inspiring. I know a lot of your kids were there at CPAC, and we're very excited of having Elizabeth Santorum on our show later this show. Let me ask you, what did they think of your speech and the experience at CPAC this year?
Well, it's funny, because I made some notes. As those who have followed me politically know, I don't do a lot of scripted speeches or hardly any. I think I've done one in the last 15 years, and that was at the convention, as only because they required me to do it. But normally I sort of get up and talk, just start talking from my heart. But, you know, when you have a tight time frame like 15 minutes and you're speaking to a national audience, you probably should make some notes. And so I did, and so I went through the notes with the kids on the way to the speech, and they were like, yeah, I didn't think it was that good. And I said, well, you know, I said, what do you think? And they made a couple of suggestions, which I incorporated a few things in there. And afterwards,
that's
I said, now what do you think? I said, boy, that was a ton better than the speech you gave. So they were very, very happy, and I think they saw themselves a little bit in the speech, which is always great. It's a family effort.
Oh, that is great. And, you know, there are a lot of young people at CPAC, and that's an important generation to tick with, isn't it?
It is. We really have to do a better job in just talking to the younger folks. I mean, I as conservatives, because one of the real concerns is that the conservative movement is being fractured at the college and university level, that the libertarian ideal of, hey, I should be able to do whatever I want to do. If I want to, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, it's all fine as long as nobody else gets hurt. Well, that's sort of a libertarian philosophy that everybody's morality is your own business. There's no real moral truth out there that we have to abide by, and we should get rid of laws that have any kind of flavor of morality attached to them, and that's gotten a lot of popularity, and as you can imagine, among young people who are really haven't necessarily thought through those issues to the consequence of what that means for them and for society. And so we have to have a conservative, not a libertarian, but the conservative voice out there. And I mean, there are a lot of things libertarians support that I support, so don't get me wrong, but on those particular issues, it's very, very important for conservatives to engage at the America's youth. Otherwise, they're being raised by, in a sense, the Democratic and Republican Party, at least the face of it, that are counter to the basic conservative principles that a good and healthy society are based upon.
Senator, you're heading back to New Hampshire this Friday, first time, I believe, since the 2012 campaign. What are your plans while you're there?
Just looking forward to seeing a lot of real good folks who were at our side and helping us out up there. It was a it was a great experience. In the history of primary, it was a fascinating experience, and on a variety of different levels. Certainly, because it is the first primary internationally, it is a there's much more attention paid to the New Hampshire primary even than the Iowa caucuses. And so it was really funny the last week or so that I was campaigning in New Hampshire. I think I ran into as many people from out of the country as I did from New Hampshire, and probably more people from out of New Hampshire than I did from the other two combined. So it's just a it was a really interesting. I realized you really can't do hand-to-hand campaigning in New Hampshire the last couple of weeks because folks in New Hampshire sort of realize that it's a zoo, and so they stay away. So you better make your contacts before then if you're going to try to reach the average guy in New Hampshire up there. But my last experience in New Hampshire was a bit of an odd one. So feeling like I was campaigning not to the people of New Hampshire, but to everybody else. But it was overall it was a great experience, and look forward to coming back and seeing folks.
Well, I know after CPAC you had a lot of media appearances and a lot of positive stories in the press, Politico, Washington Times, USA Today. I know the USA Today said that Rick Santorum urges conservatives to quit being defined by Democrats and unite behind a message that eases the fears of working families. And I know you appeared on Fox News Sunday over the weekend and also talked about some current events, the situation in the Ukraine. How do you think President Obama's foreign policy failures have hampered our ability now to help deal with this crisis?
Well, I think it's becoming clear to most people, certainly all but the most rabid of partisans, that a policy of weakness, of disengagement, of leading from behind, of appeasement, particularly to folks who are hostile to the United States and our interests, is not going to end up with a peaceful and safe world or a safe America. And we're seeing the impact of America's removal from the world stage in many respects. And now, believe it or not, there's still people out there around the world who don't think like enlightened liberals who don't care about anything other than, their own little community and their own little world and don't think that anybody else really cares about conquering land or spreading their influence. Well, that's just not the case. There are lots of folks who have designs on changing the future of the world and are hell-bent to get about doing it if the United States is going to step out of the way and let them. And I think one of them is Vladimir Putin. Obviously, you have the Iranian situation, which is incredibly dangerous right now, that has been moved off of the front page. But we sit in a negotiation with the Iranian government as they continue to insist that it's their right to continue to pursue all these nuclear programs and all these weapons programs and missile programs, all of which are designed to result in a nuclear bomb. This is the real danger of having a reelected president. You got three more years almost of foreign policy, where the world has its recess. People are just out doing whatever they want to do, and it's a very, very dangerous time for our allies, many of whom are dependent upon us to help stand with them against these tyrants, whether it's Israel, whether it's Ukraine, whether it's the Baltics, whether it's Poland, you can go on down the line. We need to start asserting ourselves again. And, the president's done a few things about sending some military into the Baltics, and that's fine. But the first step in this process, the first step that sent the signal of the reset that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama wanted to reset with the Russians was not deploying our missile defense system in Poland and the Czech Republic. I think we need to revisit that. I think we need to say, look, we see now what the Russians are up to, and we are going to stand with our Central and Eastern European allies and support their right to autonomy. We need to put those missile systems back in, or not back, but into Poland and the Czech Republic.
Senator, we want to give our listeners a little sneak peek at something Patriot Voices is going to launch later this week. It's going to be a petition opposing Common Core standards. Can you tell us why you think Common Core is wrong and why you oppose it?
Well, fundamentally, the revolution that has to occur in education for us to have children leave school with both the values and the knowledge to be successful citizens and be able to raise families and prosper is not going to come from the federal government or a common curriculum or No Child Left Behind, or even I would argue some of the things going on at the state level. It's going to come from parents who have control over the education of their children. That this has to be, we have to get back to the basics. And the basics is every parent should have the right to send their child to a school that is in the best interest of their child. We do that with college. The federal government doesn't mind helping moms and dads support low-income moms and dads and giving them the resources or lending them the resources to go out and get the education that they determine is best for their children. Yet when it comes to the most basic of education, the things that's the most important, no, we're going to set you up in a really 19th century model of education and that is proven not to work. It doesn't work. And yet we continue to stay with it because of the political forces arrayed around it. And now we have Common Core, which comes in and says not only are we going to set up how the schools are going to operate and with the teachers' unions and the state and federal government controlling things and parents not having real access to real choices, now we're going to tell you we're going to have a national standard of what your children are going to be taught as opposed to what you think in your own local community is best for your children or even individually what's best for your children. That's just the wrong approach. It's not
true.
What we should be doing. It's not who should be saying it, and that's one of the reasons that's the principal reason why we need to start retrenching here on Common Core. But it has to be part of a broader movement to put parents back in charge of the education system.
Well, Patriot Voices members can look for that petition later this week. Senator, we have people calling in on the show, and we have one listener that has a question for you. They've called in and asked, what do you think of the flat tax?
I guess my general reaction to the flat tax is I like simpler, I like less deductions, I like the idea of simplicity. What I don't like about the flat tax is that it's the same rate for everybody. I don't think that someone making $10,000 a year should pay the same rate as someone who's making $1 million a year. First off, it's the ability for someone to afford to pay those taxes at $10,000 a year is a lot less than someone who's making $1 million a year. And so there is a legitimate reason to charge people different rates of taxation. A simple flat tax that for the sake you could fill out on a postcard would be an enormous increase of taxes on a lot of low and middle income people in America, which I just don't see as number one politically viable, but more important, I just don't think it's the right way to finance a government. I think that we should make sure that folks who are lower income have incentives to work, and that they are rewarded for their work, and that at least getting started up the income ladder are not hit with heavy rates of taxation.
Switching gears a bit, we'll let you go here, Senator. I understand the Hallmark Channel will be airing one of the Acolytes movies, The Redemption of Henry Myers. Can you tell us a little bit about the movie and why folks should tune into that?
Well, it's a great little film. I just watched the Hallmark cut. We had to trim about 7 or 8 minutes from the movie, and so I actually last night. They still had 2 minutes to go. They couldn't find. So I watched the movie last night with the time code, and at least I found about 1:40 that I thought we could cut back. And so I sent that to the folks at Hallmark last night. So we're still doing the final edits to the film, It's called The Redemption of Henry Myers. It's not a true story, but it's set in the West. It's got a little action at the beginning with a bank robbery, but it really is a story of redemption. It's a story of forgiveness. People can change. That's really the one theme that goes through that folks who have had difficult times in their lives that God is there for you and redemption is possible and change is possible. And the star of the movie is a guy named Drew Waters, who you might have seen on Friday Night Lights. He's done some other films too, and he does a great job. Aaron Buffet, he played in Courageous and Fireproof, is another major actress, is lead actress in the film. And there's a couple of great kids. Girl who plays Aaron's daughter, whose name is Laura in the movie, is just fabulous. She really steals the show, in my opinion. So it's really good quality acting, and I think you'll really engage the script. Even I've seen it like four or five times, and I get emotional in a few of those scenes. They did a really good job of really authentic, authentic conversion, and it's a beautiful film. I'm really pleased that Hallmark, would run this film, because it's a film that at the core of it is a faith message, and so we're really excited that they're branching out and having some very faith-friendly films on the Hallmark Movie Channel. I just want to make sure it's not the Hallmark Channel, it's the Hallmark Movie Channel, and it's a week from Sunday, so it's March the 23rd. It's
great.
At 9 o'clock Eastern Time, 8 Central, so you'll see on the Hallmark Movie Channel. I encourage, let everybody, you're going to enjoy this film, and here's the other thing, the bigger the audience we have for this, you saw what happened with Son of God and the movie theaters and the Bible series on TV, when channels, TV channels and movie theaters see that people get behind a film because of the message in the film, then guess what? You're going to see more movies with that message. You're going to see more movies that are well done, that have a strong message that talks about the importance of faith in people's lives. And you'll certainly walk away with this and that from this movie, The Redemption of Henry Myers, 9 o'clock on March 23rd. Please have let our chapter folks get our chapter leaders get that message out and make sure that we have a good showing of folks sitting in front of the TV on Sunday night watching that movie.
March 23rd, awesome. That's exciting, and people can always check out the website there, echolight.com, of which you are the CEO.
The trailer for the movie is on Echolight, echolight.com, and you can go check out the trailer and tune in a week.
Senator, thank you so much for joining us today. It's always a privilege and pleasure, and God bless you and your family, and look forward to touching back with you in a couple weeks.
Thank you so much. God bless everybody. Bye-bye.